Okay. We're continuing and finishing, Ritz Hashem, our discussion about Oitz HaBezin. Okay, and we have two more topics to talk about within Oitz HaBezin. Okay, and the first is the price of products that are sold by Oitz HaBezin. So we mentioned briefly until now that when you sell something in Oitz HaBezin, Bezin can only charge for melachos that were done by the farmer that he was allowed to do. They're not allowed to charge for the fruit. Okay. So Chaim Kineski points out that in the Tosefta, it only talks about charging for melachos that are done after the produce is harvested. I don't have the Tosefta on the board, but it's all for things that were done after it was harvested. But he says, so I think there's no reason why Bezin shouldn't be allowed to pay the farmer and charge for things like watering his field, using his storage space, using his equipment, all those other kinds of things. Because if you think about it, the farmer, Be'etzem, has no incentive, let's say, to water his field. Why should he? It's not his produce. It's going to be hefker anyhow. So he may be allowed to water the field sometimes, but why would he want to? Why should he go to the terech of it? So the tzibur is going to have to pay him to water the field. I mean, he knows what to do. We'll find someone to water the field, because no one else is going to do it. Why would anybody want to do it? So they could pay him also. So the Tosefta happens to mention all the examples in Tosefta are things you pay for after the things are harvested. But who are things you can pay for him before him? Things that he's allowed to do. Fine. So you can pay for all those things. Okay, but even that said, so we pay him for all the work he does before the fruit is ready. He pays him for the fruit after it's ready. He pays for storage and delivery and packaging and all these other things. But of course, the logic is that the Oitz HaBezin produce should cost less than it does in a regular year. But that's the logical thing, because you're not paying for the fruit. You're paying for lots of other things, which you pay for every year anyhow, but not for the fruit.
What else is involved in selling the fruit besides the...
Well, the fruit, there's a value to the apple itself also.
The value is created by the labor involved.
Okay, so you say that the...
Well, the only extra is going to be the real estate.
No, the real estate he could charge for also, it's his. The real estate is not his.
Not
the park is not his. We mentioned this thing. If people can come in and ruin your limb, you can kick them out of the field. They're not going to come in. They're only going to come. So the fruit is after.
So
it's like sort of assume that there's some value to the fruit itself. I don't know. So you say, well, the Chazanish says, listen to what the Chazanish says. He says, if the price would be the same, he says, Meshakeh is in your mitzvah shvias. Okay, it makes you forget that there's a mitzvah. It should really cost less. Okay, you're saying, we'll see about that in a second.
Well, that's the Chazanish also says, the surprise. Can't happen to be that
no. So it's not just because Meshakeh. It's not just because that. But there's some value to the apple, I guess. And you're saying the whole value of the apple is all the work I put into it.
He was his face value is whatever.
Okay, so that's interesting. I wouldn't have put it that way. But anyhow.
Well, normally the price would take all these things into consideration, plus the price of food.
But he's saying is there's no value to... He's saying all the price is all those other things involved. Because if the farmer didn't do anything to make the apple come, the Rashi brought the apple. He didn't do anything to the apple. So he says, well, why am I paying for the apple? I'm only paying for everything else involved. Okay, that's an interesting way to look at it. But anyhow, so everybody else thinks not like that. Everybody assumes that the apple has some kind of value to it also. So Rabbi Ramon gave us an example why this might not be true. Okay, in other words, logically, if I walk into the store, let me see the other way around. If I walk into the store in the year, during a regular year, an apple's cost $1 a pound. And if I come in to the Oitz HaBezin store, I expect it to charge 75 cents a pound. If it would charge $2 a pound, I'd be baffled. I mean, it's like ridiculous. How can it cost more to the Oitz HaBezin than it costs during the year, even if we've done it, there's no value to the fruit. But how can it cost more? It doesn't make no sense, it just costs more. So Rabbi Ramon explained to us,
the fact that it costs more, you mean?
It doesn't always, but it could. Okay, he explains why it's possible that it should cost more, and actually it costs more because of Shemitah rather than not because of Shemitah. And he goes like this. Okay, in other words, it's not, I forgot to mention, Rechaim Kineski brings, that the people in the Bezin should not be taking a salary. Okay, even though theoretically, I guess, there's no reason why they couldn't, he says it's inappropriate that the people who run the Bezin should be taking a salary out of when they're running this Oitz HaBezin. Now the farmer, he's being paid for his work, but the I don't feel to call them dayanim, but the people who run the business, the administrators, shouldn't be taking us out. Anyway, okay, so...
The RAs.
What?
Whatever, the RCs.
The RCs, right, okay.
Isn't there still an element of supply and demand?
Right.
That what? Price is just covering the cost. Right. So these are their costs. These are their costs. It costs us $1,000. We made 1,000 pounds. It's $1 a pound. Okay. So now, Reverend Mo gives the following example to explain what could happen. Okay. And his example has to do with peaches. Okay. His example was peaches. Okay. So he said like this. He said, no, no, not pomegranate. No, no, no. His pomegranates were for free. So he said like this. He said, in his area, there's a peach farmer in Gush Etzion, where he lives, on this farm, in a regular year, the trees would produce 20,000 peach buds. Those are peach buds, in case you're curious. Okay, 20,000 peach buds. Each bud would create one peach. Okay, and each of those peach would be so tiny that there'd be nothing to eat. You could never sell those peaches. Okay, the peaches, the trees left to their own thing, do their own thing, would produce 20,000 buds. 20,000 peaches, and all those peaches would be absolutely worthless. Okay, that's what he said. But what they do is, if you did nothing, you did no pruning, you get 20,000 peaches, and you make buckets. Okay, zero, nothing doing. Okay, but what they do in a regular year, what they do is the farmer prunes it to the point that he gets only 400 peaches, not 20,000 peaches, 400 peaches. Okay, and of those 400 peaches, Half of them are 55 centimeters. Millimeters across diameter, and half of them are 65 millimeters. And the price depends on how big they are. The smaller ones go for 8 shekel a kilo, and the bigger ones go for 16 shekel a kilo. Okay? So that happens if you make in a normal year, when he does his pruning, instead of getting 20,000 peaches, the guy's going to end up with only 400 peaches, okay? Which is going to bring him to, and he'll earn from that field, if you follow the math over here, he earns 824 shekel, okay? That's what the guy's going to earn from this field. It's what? But because he pruned in the normal way, he ends up, instead of with 20,000 peaches, he ends up with 400 peaches. Half of them are the smaller kind, half of them are the bigger kind. And he altogether can now earn 824 shekel for all of that work. Okay? So the farmer came to Rabbi Ramon and said to him, I'm keeping Shemitah. Tell me what I could do. And they went through all the pratim of how much pruning he could do. Rabbi Ramon told him, do as much pruning as you can before Shemitah. Cut down on your pruning. Do some pruning after Shemitah. He had all kinds of tenuria for him. Having to do with the rules of Ukmil on it, which is not for now. A whole tshuva written about how he explained to this person what he is and is not allowed to do. A whole hezber as to what he's allowed to prune, etc. And he told him to have a guy do some of the pruning. All kinds of things that he told him. Okay? And as a result, because he's going to do Rabbi Ramon's pruning, all of his peaches are going to end up being 55 millimeter peaches. No 65. My ex, you like my ex? No. Yeah. No, I can explain to you. No 65 millimeter peaches this year. Okay. If you do you follow Hilchos Shemitah. The person's going to follow Hilchos Shemitah. He's going to get the same 400 peaches, but the 400 peaches that he gets are going to be, I'm not saying it's exactly, this is just a story. I mean, it's based on the true thing, but okay. Okay, now, what happens like this, because if they do the pruning right, the question is like this: how much do you think the farmer is entitled to earn for his 400 peaches? Remember, last year he earned 824 shekel. Okay, that's how much you're listed for his 400 peaches, for all the work that he did. So how much of his salary do you think he's entitled to? Remember, we're not in charge for the fruit. We can only charge for the labor and all the trimmings and his truck driving and his packaging and all those other things. How much is he allowed to earn? What percentage do you think we should give the guy for his 800, for his all the things that he did? Okay, so like this. So I have no idea. I don't know what the real price should be. How much should you pay someone for all his work? But it's like this. If we charge 9 shekel a kilo, he's going to earn, this is how much he would earn, depending if we charge 8, 9, or 10 shekel a kilo, okay, he can earn between about 500 and 600 shekel, which is between 60 and 75% of what he would have earned in a regular year. So what that means is, if we Let's say we decide that he's supposed to earn three quarters of the price of the fruit is because of his labor, and a quarter is for the fruit itself. David says zero should be for the fruit. But let's say we decide three quarters should be for the fruit, then we have to charge 10 shekel a kilo in order to make back the money that Bezin spent. Bezin's going to pay him 620 shekel. We have to charge 10 shekel a kilo. Well, guess what happened? Last year, those same peaches cost 8 shekel a kilo. Remember, we only have 55 millimeter peaches. Last year, 55 millimeter peaches went for 8 shekel a kilo. This year, they have to go for 10 kilo shekel a kilo because he followed the Hoshmita. Had he pruned
the smaller.
And therefore, the peaches, the people who buy the smaller peaches, right? Because he followed the Hoshmita, he ended up only with the smaller peaches. Yeah. Because he ended up with the smaller peaches, we have to charge more per kilo in order to make up his money. Okay, in other words, the money is in the big peaches. But because of what he's doing, because of the rules of Uk Milana, he's not allowed to basically do so much pruning that we give him big peaches. He's not allowed to do that. Well, if he's not allowed to do that, we're stuck with only smaller peaches, and he has to charge more. So it turns out that there's no shenanigans of people, you know, siphoning off money from the Eitzer Bezin and all kinds of devious plots that people have. No, this person followed the Rav's direction of how to treat his field during Shemitah, and because he did that, Bezin is going to charge more per kilo than they would to other people. Okay, so that's an example that even though theoretically the price of the Eitzer Bezin produce should be less than the regular produce, in this case, the price of the Eitzer Bezin produce is more than it would be in a regular year. Okay, that same peach costs more. Okay, now, however, Bezin sits down and says, you know what, he's entitled to this much salary for the work that he did. For his watering, we're going to pay him $12 an hour, and for his picking, we're going to pay him $4 an hour. They make up a price, how much are going to pay him? But in the end, it's going to come not to the full amount of his salary, but some percentage. And when Bezin sets that price, let's say it turns out to be 75% of the regular amount, so that Lamai says, then they have to divide those costs between their 400 peaches that they got. When they divide those costs, it comes up to 10 shekel a kilo.
Why would you charge a worker for doing that?
That is what they do. So they're paying him like a worker.
Anyway, so charging more per fruit, really, because we're charging for his malacha, which is only 75% from what he would normally earn from his usual food.
Right, and the reason is because the usual malacha brings him out fruit that are better fruit, that could sell for a higher price. We couldn't get any of those better fruits for this
people.
That's what they're paying.
No,
it has nothing to do. The salary they paid him was 620 shekel. That's how much they paid him.
Where did they get it from? That's
how much you pay a worker, 620 shekel. Now, that 620 shekel has to be divided between 400 fruits. We got 400 fruits for our 620 shekel. So now it ends up being 10 shekel a kilo. We weren't trying to make it a certain price. We had to pay him. The price we ended up paying was 620 shekel. 620 shekel means we have 62 kilo. 620 shekel is 10 shekel a kilo. We figured out we paid him like a poil, but that's what it came out to be. Usually when we pay a guy 620 shekel, we end up with a lot of big fruit also. For that labor, we end up with big fruit. Well, we have big fruit, we can charge more for them. Here we don't have any, so here we have to charge what we have to charge. We have to make up money. Now, Rav Ashi says,
the level of labor the same?
No, maybe it's a little less. You're right, because he can't do as many malachas, so it's a little less, but in the end, there's an amount that we have to pay. That amount has to be divided by how many fruit we worked out with. And in this case, we could end up having to pay more. You're right, it might end up being we only have to pay 500 shekel, in which case we could still charge 8 shekel a kilo. But depending on the situation, in Rabbi Ramon's case, that's what happened. The amount they had to pay came out to an amount that was more per kilo than it was in the regular year. Now, Rav Ashi White says like this. He says, it seems logical that we're paying the people to do work. They're just workers in the field. If we pay the people to do their work, then the price for the fruit should have nothing to do with how good the fruit is. So, for example, what happens, it's not coming on screen, what happens if I had, instead of all 400 came out of small ones, what happens if I got 100 large ones and 300 small ones? Okay, let's say that's how it worked out. 100 large ones grew and 300 small ones grew. Well, Rav Ashi says, theoretically, the price should be the same. Because the price, the work, the same amount of work went in to make big ones and small ones. This is what the guy did. Once the guy did all this work, he says, you should charge the same amount for big ones and small ones. Because now, he says, the problem is, he begrudgingly agrees that you don't have to do that. He says, because Lamaisa, if you charge the same amount, we're going to have this problem. Because if you figure it out, if you had the same amount, we would charge 9.5 shekel a kilo for those fruit. What's going to happen? Okay, the 100 fruit that were larger are going to sell out in a second. Okay, because the price is really discounted. Usually it's 16 shekel a kilo, now it's 9.5. So they're going to sell out in a second. The big ones are going to sell out right away. The small ones are not going to sell very well. Because they cost more than a regular year. They're not going to sell very well. So Bezin may not make the money back. So actually, Bezin's going to have to raise their prices for everything in order for the fact that the small ones are not going to sell so well. Okay, so...
Well, there are no more big ones, and what are
you going
to eat?
Well, people will eat nothing. They'll let them eat cake. You know what I'm saying? They won't eat both. They won't.
And there's a demand for peaches.
If you walk into the fruit store and peaches were $10 a pound, you won't buy peaches. You say, I don't live without peaches. It's not like automatic, I have to eat peaches. If the price is too high, people won't eat it. So he says, begrudgingly, he says, as a sales tactic, Bezin is allowed to charge more or less. But he says, but they have to be careful that they don't end up charging for the fruit. Really charging more for a big fruit is really charging for the fruit. It's not for the labor, because the labor is equal. You get the same labor to make the big one and the small one. So he says you have to just be careful that when you structure your prices, it doesn't end up being really for the fruit. Okay, that's what you're trying to gain over here.
You're only averaging different size peaches, not all the fruits together.
So you could do that. Actually, you could do that. But that was an idea we thought of, which is maybe what you should do is sell bags of peaches. And every bag should have three small ones and one big one. And then charge an average price for it. You know, every bag you get three smalls and one big. Okay, and then you could charge an average price. You could do that. The problem was, Rabbi Weiss's case was he wasn't talking about peaches. He was talking about Esrogim. Okay, and unless you know you have a big family, nobody wants to buy a family-sized bag of Esrogim. You know, they don't sell Esrogim and Sam's Club. You know, yeah, they don't sell Esrogim and Sam's Club because most people
technically
fly. You know, the Reese's Baruch Hashem could use a family-sized bag of Esrogim, but most people don't have so many boys to give their Esrogim to. You know, so it doesn't work. Okay, for peaches, you could do that. You know, put the big them just so that you get a random assortment, and so you get some bigs and some smalls. Okay, let's move on. Okay, the next thing we have to talk about is the mitzvah of beer. Okay, the mitzvah of beer is, there's a machlekes rishonim what the mitzvah of beer is. Some rishonim hold that the mitzvah of beer is you have to actually destroy the produce, and according to them, the same works for oitzeh bezin produce. You have to destroy it. When it comes the time of beer is when there's no more left for the chayas pasada, then you have to, according to these rishonim, you have to destroy it. So you have to destroy it. If it's oitzeh bezin, you have to destroy it. But we don't pass like that. We pass in that beer means you have to make it hefker. So the Chazanish says that if the din is that bezin, that beer means you have to make it hefker, it means you have to make it available for everyone to take it. He says, when Bezdin is holding on to produce for everybody, it's an Oitzer Bezdin, it's effectively had Hefker done permanently to it. Bezdin has a storehouse with thousands of peaches in it, but they're not hoarding it, they're not keeping it for themselves, they're making it available to the public. This is the most efficient way to make it available to the public, so the beer is automatic, and Bezdin is not required to actually put it out in the street and declare it Hefker. Even though it's sitting in a warehouse, it beets in Hefker, and therefore there's no need to do a formality of beer. Beer is automatic. It's built in that there's a beer when Oitzer Bezin holds on to the produce. Chaim Pineski adds on. The same thing is true even if it's not in the Bezin's warehouse. Even if the Bezin has already distributed it, and it's at one of their distribution centers, they have like little stores around, so to speak, stores around, those distribution centers are also extensions of the Bezin. They're also holding it for the public. Maybe it's a little smaller public, it's just one little neighborhood, but basically it's for the public. It also doesn't need beer. Beer is an automatic, it's like a built-in beer. But he says, as Rishon Zalman says also, if a person already took Paris from the Oitzer Bezin, because I went to the store and I picked up my bag of peaches for 10 shekel a kilo, and I brought them home, now I have to do beer. If I'm holding it at the time of beer, then I am no longer holding it for the public, then I have mechuyev beer like everybody else's. Okay, so the mitzvah of beer for this produce is pretty straightforward. If an individual has it, he has to do the mitzvah. If he doesn't have it, the Bezin in some of its form has it, no mitzvah of beer, so to speak, no formality of beer. Beer happens automatically. Okay? That's the simple part of beer. Now, the question that we have is, what is the din of these peiros after beer? Now, we're going to talk about it, this discussion, for Oitzer Bezin, but really, this discussion has nothing to do with Oitzer Bezin. And really, what I'm about to talk to you about is there Kedusha Shvias after the mitzvah of beer passes? Okay? The reason why I'm talking to you about it now, when we're talking about Oitzer Bezin, is because most of us living in Chutzards, never see Kedusha Shvias produce, because Kedusha Shvias produce is not allowed to be exported. Okay, so for us, the shaila of what to do with Kedusha Shvias produce after the beer is not such a real question, except for wine. Okay, and the reason is because, as I'm going to tell you in a second, if you think that there's no more Kedusha Shvias after the beer, then you can export it. There's no more Kedusha Shvias anymore. And in fact, there's one Hashgacha that makes wine with Kedusha Shviyas, they make it after beer has passed. Ooh, I'm sorry, they sell it after the time of beer has passed. Because they say there's no more Kedusha Shviyas to it. And that's what we're going to talk about this shiloh. Is it Kedusha Shviyas after beer by Eitz HaBezdin? Because they're working with Eitz HaBezdin wine, and they sell that Eitz HaBezdin wine after the time of beer has passed, and they sell it in Chutz La'aretz without any Kedusha Shviyas to it. Okay, and they label it as such, but they label it as not having Kedusha Shviyas anymore. If it was really Eitz HaBezdin and it had Kedusha Shviyas, they couldn't export it. They couldn't charge for it, and it would be terribly irresponsible to sell that stuff just in a random supermarket where anybody could buy it and not know what to do with it. So they say it is from Eitz HaBezdin after the time of beer. It says after the time of beer on it. I tried to get a picture, I didn't get one, of the label. So we're going to talk about it. So our discussion of whether there's Kedusha Shviyas if the beer, we're going to connect it to wine and Eitz HaBezdin, but that's what we have to do with that. If I had Kedusha Shviyas apples in my house in Eretz Yisrael, and came the time of beer, and I did beer properly, it's the same question. Is the Kedusha Shviyas after? Okay? You have a question? Okay. That same question. Is the Kedusha Shviyas after beer applied? We're going to talk about it for Eitz HaBezdin, because that's how we see it. Okay? It comes to Hungarian. Hungarian had that wine for sale a couple of years ago, had that wine. So wine is the example that we have of Kedusha, of Perish Shviyas after beer. But it really applies to everything. Okay.
And whether you buy it or not, pretty much everybody ends up with it because you'll invariably end up having a guest that gives it to
you. By mistake, who didn't realize. Because it has lots of Hebrew words on it. Lots of Hebrew words on it that no one knows what they mean. It looks like it's part of the Hechsher. It's lots of Hebrew words. It says, it's a Bezdin beer after time. I don't know if it says they did beer. It says it was after time of beer because the Bezdin doesn't have to do beer. The beer is like automatic. They don't have to do a formality of beer. But beer, it's like companies that... non-Jewish companies who make matzah. Okay, and it says on the package, it says, the laws of challah were followed. Okay, and the reason why it says that is because they're owned by God, and they don't mafish challah. They're not mafish challah. So they say we were mafish challah because they weren't. And it says the laws of challah were followed. Okay, because, you know, we did what the Torah said. And the Torah says you don't do mafish challah. No, of course, it might say that on the Hebrew side, I don't know. On the English side, it says the laws of challah were followed because it's owned by God, and they're not doing mafish challah. Okay. you have to learn how to read these things, you know. So let's go like this. What's the question? Okay. Question is like this. Okay. The Mishnah says like this. Okay. The Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah in the ninth paragraph says like this. Before I go back. Okay. We talked about this Mishnah. I'm about to show you in a second. We talked about this Mishnah once before. And the Mishnah is talking about Tevin, straw, whether it has Kedusha Shviyas. We once talked about it when we talked about having... things that for Michael Behema, whether they have what the dinim are for that, but speaking, we're not talking about that now. But we talked about this Mishnah. The Tevin is assumed to be only royal Michael Behema, it's not royal Michael Ogre. Okay? That's what you have to know before we see this Mishnah. And what did the Mishnah say? Until when could you burn? Which means, there's lots of shayla about how to gear yourself. Just believe me that what the Mishnah means to say is, at what point are you allowed to burn Tevin? Okay, burning is destructive. You're not allowed to burn something that has Kedusha Shviyas. Well, Tevin has Kedusha Shviyas because it's royal Lamaicha Behema. So at what point, when are you allowed to burn straw? At what point are you allowed to? And the Mishnah says, Achatei Revir Shniyah. You're allowed to do it when the second big rain comes in Chesed, when the second big rain comes, and that means is when it starts to rain a lot, any straw that's left out in the field begins to rot because it's getting wet and moldy and things like that outside, and therefore there's no more Tevin outside the Tevin outside in the field is worthless anymore, and at that point you're allowed to burn it. What does that mean? The simple reading of the Mishnah is the Mishnah saying to you is like this. Once it starts, the second rain comes, there's no more left for the chayas in the sodeh, because it starts to rot in the fields. There's no more left for the chayas. If there's no more left for the chayas, that's the time of beer. So you have to do beer on it. Once the time of beer passes, now there's no more Kedusha Shviyas, and you can burn it. So at that point, you're allowed to burn it, because there's no more Kedusha Shviyas, because time of beer passed. So once the Mishnah, the simple reading of the Mishnah is, once the time of beer comes, there's no more Kedusha Shviyas. Okay, that's what the simple reading of that Mishnah is. Okay. Comes along to Gemara, comes along to Yerushalmi, and says like this. Brings a machlekes. Yerushalmi says like this. Amar Rav Chanina, mikivan shetishach masha besoder, huter masha bebayis. So Rav Chanina says, exactly like I just explained to you the Mishnah, he says, what the Mishnah needs to tell you is, once the stuff in the field spoils because it rained, huter masha bebayis. Then, now the time of beer has passed, and therefore what's left in the house, it becomes mutter, and you can burn it. It has no more Kedusha Shviyas to it. That's what Rav Chanina says. Okay? But, Tanya Rapashia, Afilu Achad Gimel Shon Oser, Ad Jatishrach Tevin Shosfias. Okay? So now, what Rav Hoshia is saying is a shaila in the Farshim. What does Rav Hoshia mean to say? The Marafulda and most of the Poskim, most of the Mepharshim learn that Rav Hoshia agrees with Rav Chanina about the Pshat in the Mishnah. He's arguing about the details. Okay? The Mishnah says it's Teir Revi Shnia, and Rav Hoshia says, no, it could be sometimes it lasts even 3 years. Sometimes the stuff doesn't spoil in the Teir Revi Shnia. Sometimes it lasts till the third, for three more years. So you have to wait till the beer really, till the time of beer really comes. The time of beer doesn't come necessarily in the beginning of Cheshvan, in the middle of Cheshvan. Sometimes the beer happens years later. Okay, Mamash can take years until that happens. But inherently, he agrees with Rav Chanina that. He agrees with Rav Chanina that there's no that after the time of beer there's no kedusha shvius. That's a mouthful. Most of the first one like that. In which case, both of these people agree with what the Mishnah said that the after the beer passes there's no more kedusha shvius. Okay, the Rash Cirilio learns a different shaila. He learns that Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshia are arguing about the Mishnah. Rav Chanina is saying like what the Mishnah said that after the beer there's no more kedusha shvius, and Rav Hoshia is arguing. He says no. Even after 3 years, meaning after stuff has long spoiled, it doesn't make a difference. If you have produce in your house, that stuff has kedusha shvius to it. The fact that beer passed makes no difference. Even years later, there's obviously nothing left in the fields. Years later, even when there's nothing yet left in the field, still there's kedusha shvius. It doesn't make a difference. So according to the Rash Cirilio, Rav Hoshia is either he's arguing on the Mishnah or he's on a different shot in the Mishnah, and Rav Hoshia is saying that the din is even if the beer this kedusha shvius, and the Rash Cirilio says we pass on Rav Hoshia. We pass on Rav Hoshia that after beer there still is kedusha shvius. Okay, so according to so far what we saw with the Yerushalmi, either everyone agrees that there's no kedusha shvius after beer, or it's a machlokes, and the Rash Cirilio says we pass on Rav Hoshia that there is kedusha shvius. Okay, that's the first part of the Yerushalmi. The end of the Yerushalmi. This is towards the beginning of the Yerushalmi on this Mishnah. Towards the end of the Yerushalmi, it says, does it? No. Anybody else? Okay, we're getting reruns over here. Okay. At the end of Yerushalmi, it says like this. Okay. It has a complicated question, not for us. This is what we talked about last time about Tevin. Okay. And the end of the Yerushalmi says like this. It says, two pshatim, it to be masber what the Mishnah says. The first pshat says, tifter v'ochle behemel adam. Okay, and the second shot says, Omer Amana, Tifter v'kedusha shvius b'bir. Okay, there's a machlokes how to understand what the Yerushalmi is saying when it says this. Okay, these two explanations, Tifter, they give two hesberim into what the Mishnah means. Okay, the Marafulda learns that the first pirush, Tifter v'ochle behemel adam, says that the Mishnah took about something else. The Mishnah is teaching us a rule, not that, like I told you. I told you that the Mishnah means that after beer you're allowed to. There's no more kedusha shvius. That's not what it means. Really, the Mishnah is teaching us a different rule. That oichlei behema, things that are roi l'maicha behema, like kevin, are allowed to be used for by people in a destructive way. So you're allowed to be serif to kevin to benefit humans because it's only maicha behema. And it's an upgrade to use the Michael Behema for an other, even in a destructive way. And therefore, the Mishnah teaches us a different thing. It has nothing to do with Kedusha Shvius of after beer. It tells me that even in the middle of the year, Oichle Behema could be birth for people. Okay? And Ramana is saying the Mishnah the way we had understood it. Tifta Kedusha Shvius with beer, that after beer you're left, there's no more than a Kedusha Shvius. That's how he learns. The Gra, I'm getting too deep into this, okay? I'm sorry. The Gra says that this Rishami has nothing to do with anything about Mishnah. Okay, this tifter, it's a whole big shot on the gear says over there at the end of according to the Gemara, these words here have nothing to do with the mission. Okay, they're part of the mission. Okay, so, in short, according to the Marafolda, both Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshia said that this, after beer, there's no more than a Kedusha Shvius. According to the Rash Cirilio, only Rav Hoshia said that. According to the second opinion of the Yerushalmi, where the Marafolda learns, it again said that there's no more Kedusha Shvius after beer. Okay. According to the Rash Cirilio, there was a sheet of Rav Hoshia that there is kedusha shvius after beer, and he says that we pass on it there. Okay. So again, most of the names, he didn't follow all the gory details. Most of the names are lining up to say that there is no Kedusha Shvius if the beer. Most of the ways to understand the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi are that there's no Kedusha Shvius if the beer. Most of everything seems to be pointing in that direction. There's one Hesber, according to the Rash Cerulei, and one Hesber, according to the Marafolda, one way to say that there is Kedusha Shvius. So, the Chazon Ish speaks about this in a number of places. Okay, most of the places where the Chazon Ish speaks about it, when he's like in the sugya, if I could use that word, most of the places where the Chazon Ish talks about it, the Chazon Ish says in Kula. Like most of the Mefarshim learn, that you see from the Mishnah and from most of the Yerushalmi that there's no Kedusha Shvius if the beer, and therefore that wine that's being sold, the Oitzeb is the wine, after beer is perfectly legitimate. That wine is what could be sold because if the beer was done, and they don't have to do beers, but if the time of beer passes for wine, that's Pesach of the year after Shemitah. So a year from that Pesach, beer will have done automatically. There will be no more Kedusha Shvius. Then they can do whatever they want with that wine. They can sell them chutzaretz, etc.
Beer will not necessarily have done automatically. If the wine was produced before the Shas beer, I don't know if that's done, and then used the stompers and bought it and didn't do beer.
Right, but they don't sell it then. They don't yet release it to Hungary at that point. Bezdin holds on to it, and Bezdin bottles it and makes the wine.
Bezdin only sells it after Shas beer.
Yes. Okay. Maybe they sell it before beer in bottles that don't say Achar beer, and they don't sell it as Chutzar. Maybe they sell it in other bottles. But the stuff that we're seeing is stuff that was sold after the time of beer.
It says Otzer Bezdin the Achar beer?
Yes. It says that on there. I want to get a label. I couldn't find one. It's too many years ago. I want to get a label that showed you what it said. It says it in Hebrew letters. Okay, so they're holding like these many sheets, and like the Chazon Ish himself says in many places. However, and the Chazon Ish at the end has instructions for people of how to follow to keep Shemitah. Okay, brief instructions like the Kitzer, the homemaker's guide to keeping Shemitah. Okay, and actually there's a thing written by someone named Zelig Shapiro, I think his name is, who wrote rules for keeping Shemitah, many of Halachas of Tulis Baritz, and the Chazon Ish approved them. Okay, it was printed right before the Chazon Ish died. In there they say that you should have Kedusha Shvius even after the time of beer passes. Okay, so even though in most of what the Chazon Ish speaks about, he says Lekula, in this place he says Lechumra, and that's how it was printed in that Rabbi Shapiro's guide, how you should keep Shemitah, I'll be the Chazon Ish. And in fact, most of the Hashkachas follow that practice, and we'll assume that there is Kedusha Shvius even if the time of beer passed, and therefore, there's only one Hashkacha, at least Lish Shemitah, there's only one Hashkacha who did it. There was one Hashkacha who did it for one company to make that wine. We didn't let the store sell it over here, because of that. But what my point is that there's very firm basis for what they're doing. They're not, you know, it's like off the wall. It wouldn't be like they'd be selling regular Perish Shvius in Chutzars. There's very firm basis for what those people are doing. It's generally accepted not to follow that. Okay, in fact, Chazon Ish told people, like, so to speak, on the retail level that they should be machmir on that din. So we wouldn't let it. But if someone were to have it, the Hashkacha itself is not. It definitely has a legitimate sheet that they're following. And if someone were to have it, if someone actually gets it as a present or by mistake they bought it in a store, whatever it is, then the chumra that we're saying to be machmir to treat the Kedusha Shvius means treat the Kedusha Shvius. It's not awesome. It just has to be treated like Kedusha Shvius, which we know how to do that, right?